You're listening to Mind Over Markets, a podcast on trading psychology to help you build a bulletproof mindset. Here's your hosts, George Papazov and Mark Borscht.
Hello, trade pros, and welcome back to another episode of the Mind Over Markets podcast with your hosts, myself, Mark Borscht, and
George Papazov.
Welcome back, Georgie. Welcome back to our audience.
Welcome back, Marky. And also, welcome back to our audience.
What's going on, Trade Bros? We've got an exciting episode planned for you guys today. We are recording this in the first week of February of 2021. So a little bit of a timestamp. But if you guys have been following around along with the news these last couple of weeks, especially since about mid-January, one of the main things that you will have noticed is the almost euphoria around a certain number of stocks. All right, and more specifically, we're going to be talking about this GameStop short squeeze saga and how the whole thing kind of came about and what traders can ultimately learn from it. All right, because there's a lot of euphoria in the markets at this point in time, and there's a lot of fuel to the fire, if you will. And so, you know, from our perspective, we've been around in the markets to see plenty of these kinds of things happen, if you will, these stocks that suddenly get mainstream media attention and everybody all of a sudden is starting to try to jump in on these. They're seeing big gains being posted on a daily basis and they want to jump in. All right. And so we're coming towards the tail end of that saga right now. But I think there is a couple of great lessons that, you know, we can learn from what's occurred over these last couple of weeks. And that's exactly what our focus is going to be on in today's episode. So we're going to cover, you know, the euphoria around the short squeeze, what a short squeeze is, what exactly happened with GameStop, and, you know, furthermore, the more important lessons that new traders can learn about this so that the next time it happens, because, you know, the stock markets are made of human emotions, right? And as long as humans are going to have emotions, there are going to be more bubbles like what we've just seen, all right? And so our goal here is to prepare you for, you know, the next time you're better prepared for the next time this kind of thing happens. So without further ado, let's jump into it.
Perfect, Trade Bros. We're really excited to talk about this topic. You know, this is a special episode to me because so much time we spend really educating traders on how to avoid this type of situation. And now that it's happened, I think it's a good learning lesson for everyone. But before we begin the episode, I want to share a message with you. What is important to a new trader? Well, we all get attracted to these quick gains like GameStop and overnight riches. We know that the reality of any business is different. You want to learn what is being taught at institutions. You want to make this a career. You want to be part of a community of like-minded traders. You want the best for you and your family. This is what we do at TradePro Academy. It's a community for successful traders by successful traders. But you have to take action because on March 1st, our pricing model is changing forever. This is your chance to lock in the lowest membership price you will ever pay and be grandfathered in before our upcoming changes. You will get access to all the content we create in the future for one bundle if you sign up before March 1st. Check us out at TradeProAcademy.com and join our community of profitable traders by signing up today and locking in the rate. And now, back to the show.
Awesome. Thank you for that. And let's really jump into it here, guys. So first and foremost, what happened? What happened with GameStop? What's going on? You know, what's the euphoria surrounding this? Let's break it down for you guys. So what caught the attention of the mainstream media? Well, it was this little stock called GameStop. All right. And so GameStop was basically a stock that was off of most people's radars, I'd say, really up until January of this year. All right. And so around this time last year, GameStop was trading below the $5 mark. All right. So we're going to be throwing numbers at you because this really shows you, you know, what can happen as a result of euphoria in the markets. All right. So last year, this time, GME is trading at $5 a share. All right. Over the course of the year going into 2020, right? In January of 2021, into the first week of January, GME was priced at $20. All right. Then on the 13th of January and the 14th of January, GME price doubled to $40. 2 days later, doubles again. And each of the following days after that, the stock doubled again, ultimately bringing the price from $20 in the beginning of January to a high of $483 on the 28th of January. All right, that represents, and here's the percentage number, that represents a 2,265.33% increase in the course of 2 weeks. All right. And so as a result of this rapid increase, who catches on, who catches the attention of, or rather, what does this catch the attention of? The mainstream media. All right. The mainstream media is who caught wind of this, and they started running stories about this stock. All right. Really, anywhere you looked over the last 2 weeks, all you saw was GameStop on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. You know, actually, something funny is, my wife, a lot of her colleagues were asking about GameStop, you know, what's going on? Where should I get in? Is this a good opportunity, et cetera? And, you know, I just said, if you're not in already, it's better to just sit it out from the sidelines and see what happens and use it as a learning opportunity for the next time it happens. And, you know, unfortunately, some of her colleagues didn't take that advice. But, you know, that's what we're doing this episode for today. All right. So, late last year, what happened? We had a bunch of prominent investors, all right, as well as some posters on a subreddit called Wall Street Bets, which is now, you know, almost overnight famous. We've seen the subscribers in this Reddit sub forum increase by, I think it was almost 2 million a day, each day that this thing was kind of going on. So you could see kind of the power of the masses that this thing attracted, right? And so what was going on here was that a bunch of these members on this Reddit sub forum, they started arguing that GameStop might actually be a good buy because of the business, because of some of the business dealings that they were doing. I believe they signed on with a good business relationship or a good partnership. And so people thought that there was some upside to this stock.
You know what else too, Marky? Like it was the business dealings, but as I remember this, when it started for GameStop, it was before even Christmas of last year. So this thing started to really gain traction in about October. And the idea of this trade is actually a good one. You know, like it started out as a great idea before it became a frantic like movement on its own. The idea was, let's buy GameStop going into the holiday because the PS5 console came out from Sony, right? And so too did the new Xbox One. So like, hey, look, they might not have done good, but this is a perfect opportunity to capitalize on some of their revenue drivers, like these two new consoles. That's how the idea started. You know, all this madness is rooted in actually a decent idea. It's just, I think that it became frantic and people overstayed their welcome. Like, I'm reading right now a meme on Wall Street Bets. This guy said, when your GME position drops 70%, but the share is at $69, and it's a crying face. It's like, you know, a lot of the people who were in this position haven't sold yet. So when your friends, Mark, or your wife's friends were approaching her, and on my side, I was getting texts through the wazoo, they're like, what do you think about GameStop? And I said the same thing. It's like, look, those people who you're seeing posting these gains, there's a difference between an unrealized gain and a realized gain. And it takes an event like this to learn that lesson. And so I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned from all this. Sorry to cut in. I just wanted to kind of bring it back to like the driver of this whole saga and how it started out with a good intention. You know, it's a fantastic analysis. Sure, holiday season, where we get long retail every year. It's the same idea, same approach.
Exactly. And so, you know, George just kind of mentioned some of the reasons for the original, you know, increase in the stock. It was a good idea at the time. Not to say that it was a good idea or a bad idea. There was definitely a thesis behind why it should increase in value. All right. Another thing that was interesting was that the retail traders in Wall Street Bets on that Reddit forum, they thought that they could orchestrate a short squeeze by a coordinated effort to buy shares together. All right. And the idea here was to drive up the price, and ultimately any investors that were shorting that stock, they would have to buy their positions back at a higher price, which would further increase the end price of the actual stock. And so what happened, you know, some of them may have bought into the market to force a short squeeze. And what was happening was it worked, all right, for a time. you know, for a couple of days, it worked. You know, retail was beating hedge funds at their own, you know, at their own game. And, you know, that wasn't seen very, very favorably by the hedge funds. All right. Hedge funds were overly short. All right. And for anybody that doesn't really know what shorting means, shorting is simply borrowing shares. If you think that a price of a stock is going to go down, you can actually make money on the move lower. All right. And by doing that, you're going to be effectively shorting that stock. So shorting is simply borrowing shares at what you consider to be higher prices and buying them back at a lower price, making the profit in the difference between where you sold and where you bought it back at a lower price.
Can I interject here? Because I think this is an important thing. I think shorting in itself, if somebody's wondering, how do you borrow something you don't own? Right, these brokerage companies that sell you shares will lend you the shares. Where do they get them from? They're clients who hold a margin account who are long on these stocks. So if you're a long-term investor and you hold GME for a long-term period and you have a margin account, as the second you open a margin account, effectively you're letting somebody loan out your shares, and the brokerage loans them out at interest, and that's their profit. So you're borrowing shares from the broker, from a client who's holding the long, selling them, basically creating a liability with unlimited risk for yourself, hoping to buy them back cheaper. But your profit potential is limited to the full amount of value. For GME at $5, your profit potential is only $5 because it can only drop to zero, and your risk is theoretically unlimited as a short seller. So I think that's an important part to kind of go into detail there.
That's a very important part that you brought up there, because it's going to start making a lot more sense as we discuss the silent exit.
Yeah.
All right. So how did this short squeeze happen? All right. One of the things that Georgie mentioned there is that when you're shorting, you're basically borrowing shares and you got to pay interest on, you know, on holding that position open. Right. And so a lot of hedge funds, they had seen GameStop as a popular, you know, profitable short opportunity. And so what they did was they got short. They shorted shares, and so much so that the short interest float was 120%. Of the overall float. Now, Georgie, do you mind sharing with the audience what that means? What does it mean that what is a short float first and foremost, and how can it be more than 100%?
Yeah, absolutely. So a short float is what percentage of the stock. So if you have a company and you issue 100 shares, right? And then you say, here, my company is comprised of 100 shares. What percentage of that 100 shares is held by shorts? And how do we know that? It's the brokers lending the shares. How many shares are loaned out by brokers, all right, for you, for short positions? That's how they know what the short interest is. That's what's called a short float. And so anything above 30% is considered really high, all right? Like, I remember Tesla was, you know, up in the 30s, and people are like, wow, what a huge short float. Nothing in comparison to GameStop's 122%. So how do you build up 122% of a short float when there's only 100% available? All right. And that kind of goes into the problem with the industry, is that that is actually an accounting error. You can't theoretically be more than 100% short because you'd be creating shares out of thin air. But that's what happened. If you hold a share and you sell it, all right, you have an obligation. And so if you buy it back from somebody else who's trying to sell it, all right, you could actually create additional shares, if you will, but that's only within the settlement window. So if you wait, like, you know, 5+ days, it should theoretically go to 100 maximum, but it's a leverage factor. And so these shares at 122% is essentially saying that if the price goes up and everyone had to cover their short, theoretically, there's not enough shares for that to happen. And I think that's where the idea came from. Hey, you know what? This GameStop trade for the holiday season was one idea, but this idea is changing to, let's stick it to the hedge fund because they got greedy. They shorted a lot, you know, and whether it was 100 or 122%, it's very high. And so the idea here is, if you're a hedge fund that's short, to get out of your position, you have to buy back that share at a higher price. But if everybody out there is buying it with you and diamond handsing it, as they call it, meaning no one's willing to sell it, because this was a coordinated effort. This wasn't one or two investors. This is millions of people coordinating a price squeeze on a hedge fund. And they're saying, buy it, hold it, do not sell it. So think about this. People are buying it, holding it, not selling it. There's no sellers on the offer. And you have hedge funds that also want to buy it. The theory was, there's no one to buy it from if nobody's willing to sell it. This is why prices exploded so high. right? And that was the idea. That was execution. That was intended to be that way, to kind of squeeze hedge funds out at enormous losses. And we'll talk about how that didn't happen. I mean, I know some funds lost a lot of money, but it's interesting how they actually exited. The dynamics of this trade is fascinating.
Yeah, exactly. And so what's interesting, like Georgie mentioned here, is that this, you know, we were on, more so George was on YouTube each morning, you know, shouting from the rooftops, you know, keeping the retail traders up to speed with what's going on. And, you know, from the professional trader's perspective, you know, what we are seeing as a result of that, what some of the repercussions could be. And I think one of the main things that you mentioned there was that this really had the potential to create a systemic collapse in the markets, right? And the reason for that being is, as hedge funds were getting squeezed out of their positions, all right, they were the ones that would have to be buying GameStop, right? But in order to pay, this goes back to what Georgie mentioned with regards to shorting, right? When you short a stock, you are borrowing from the broker and you got interest to pay, right? So as the prices were squeezing here, the hedge funds were still on the hook for that interest, right? For the interest on their position. So what they would have to effectively do in order to not refund the accounts, but to top up their accounts in order to not be in a state of a margin call, they would have to get new cash. All right. And how would you get new cash in the markets? You're going to have to sell some stocks that you're holding. Would a hedge fund, you know, dump a whole bunch of shares on a low float stock? Probably not, because they're going to adversely affect the prices on the way down. So where would they have to sell in order to bring up this cash? Well, they'd have to sell from big name stocks. Your big name stocks such as Microsoft, you know, your Apples, the big liquidity players, those big names that you hear about on a daily basis, those would have to be sold in order to make up this cash for those margin calls, all right? And so it had the potential to become a systemic collapse. And, you know, fortunately, it's not the way that it went. But I think, Georgie, you've got some really good insight on the silent exit, how the hedge funds kind of work their way around, you know, the situation. And I think it's really interesting. And I'm sure the audience will share the same kind of ideas, or rather thoughts on it.
Yeah, no, this is a brilliant trade. And before we jump into that, Mark, I want to explain the over 100% share float, because I glazed over it. But I want you guys to understand exactly how you could get more than 100%, because this is an important part of markets. And I think the problem is here too, Mark, is that the ability that this was allowed to happen, right? Because when you short sell, there's two types of shorts. And we both worked in the brokerage industry. We know the back end operation of a brokerage. The one type of short is where the brokerage says, I have a client holding 1,000 shares of GameStop long. Therefore, I'm going to lend you that 1,000 shares for a short sale, all right? If everybody did that process, there would be no more than 100% short flow. It would have stopped at 100. Here's where it gets interesting. Some brokers allow you to do something called naked short selling. So you sell a stock that you do not own, but neither does the broker. All right. And so when that happens, the broker says, hey, sell this thing. I could always buy back at the market to cover your position and squeeze you out of the trade. But what happens to the short seller? Think about this. A short seller borrows a stock that he doesn't own, and neither does the brokerage. So nobody had this stock to lend to begin with, but there's one short position. How do you open a short? You have to sell that stock. Who do you sell it to? Somebody that buys. How does that person buying know whether this is a fictitious stock or a real one that they hold on their book? Does that make sense? So it becomes these short sellers naked shorting positions that the broker doesn't even own, and clients are buying it for the run up. All right, and now you're creating shares out of thin air. And I think this is one of the root problems that really propelled this. Because if it was 100% short float, the idea might have been, hey, we could squeeze these guys out, but it isn't going to be an infinite short squeeze, right? It would have like, hey, we're going to get up to 500, 600. The expectation here is for this asset to go 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 plus, because there's not enough shares on the marketplace to supply the demand it would take to close out the short position. I think that's where people went, you know, we got them. And it became a movement, because it's not going against, you're not doing a trade at this point. You're bringing down an institution that you believe did you wrong, right? And now you're introducing emotion into your trading. And I, you know, if you have a cause, if you have a purpose, even though it's a good cause and a good purpose, the market isn't a mechanism to execute your biases. The market's a mechanism to make money off of by releasing your biases. And I think this is where it went wrong for the retail trader. And so, you know, hedge funds are in this position where like, we got to buy back these shares. We're going to go bankrupt. Melvin Capital got a $2.75 billion bailout by Citadel. And then they also from 0.72 Holdings. Right. And then later they got more capital infused because they were in trouble. They were going to go bankrupt with an unlimited risk trade and limited reward. You know, to be honest with you, Mark, these hedge funds should not be short that many stocks of a low float company. You know, they're asking for trouble. Yeah, I don't feel bad for them. That's a trade that they knew the risk of. Right. They got into it knowing the risk. So I don't feel bad at all for those hedge funds. But I also think the hedge fund industry is being drawn into this for the wrong reasons, right? It's not the whole hedge fund industry isn't broken because a few of them decided to over leverage, right? And we could talk about that independently to answer the question you brought up. How did they exit this trade? And I think this is genius. So like we said, every year at TradePro, we do this trade called the retail trade. We get long XRT, which is a retail ETF, end of October after Thanksgiving. And we look for a run up until early year because retail sales increase because of the holiday season. And so this is a company called XRT. It's an ETF that holds some of the biggest retailers in the United States. GameStop was one of those retailers. So what happened was when GameStop's market value exploded higher, it became 20% of the whole XRT ETF. And so what hedge funds said is, look, we need to get shares on the market that nobody owns. Like the people who buy these things on GameStop on Reddit aren't willing to sell it to us. We need shares from somebody who's a willing seller. So this trade is genius. They look at XRT and they say, look, 20% of this entire ETF is GameStop. So for every $1 I spend, I'm using that 20 cents to close out my short, right? Because you're getting your hands on those shares. And so in addition to that 20%, retail was exploding. Look at the XRT ETF. Retail's up. Amazon had like a blowout quarter of earnings. So the idea here is I close out for 20% every dollar I spend because I get GameStop and I get 80% exposure to retail, which is a business that's it's an industry that's doing good. So what they do is they went out there and bought XRT because those shares were available for sale. And that's a genius move because that closes out their obligation into the short side. And then it also allows them to participate in some upside of XRT. Now, if you pull up XRT, interestingly enough, I'm going to pull it right now on my chart. You know, in this last little bit, it's dropped a lot as well. All right. But that's the drain of GameStop coming out of the ETF. What you could do with XRT is you could actually take possession. It works more like an option. You can take possession of these shares through XRT. So here's how the hedge fund closed out. Let's say they're short 1 million GameStop shares. All right. They buy 1 million shares of XRT, one for one. You close out your GameStop short, you take possession of all the stocks on XRT, and then you sell the rest of them on the market because those markets weren't crashing. Those markets were stable. They had a lot of liquidity and there were people willing to sell them. And I think whoever came up with that trade idea, you know, Mark, we talked about this, deserves a massive bonus at the hedge fund. They got out, it was at a loss, but they found a way out. And, you know, it could have went really bad, but the whole way through at TradePro, we're advocating, look, this is a sexy trade and your career isn't built on sexy short-term trades, right? You know, you chase the girl around at the bar, but you're not going to marry her. And the idea here is that it started out as a good investment. It became a big hedge fund squeeze and it ended off with holding. The guy that started this thing is down $13 million as of yesterday's close.
Wow. And he's saying, is that deep F value dude?
Yeah, the deep value guy. I mean, he's closed out. I think he closed out like $7 million in cash. Because he posted all his gains. But at one point, he was up $50 million. And so, you know, fantastic trade, dude. But you're going to have to get out of it. And yeah, you made more than me in that time stretch. So you could say, show me your gains. And I wouldn't be able to compete. But congratulations, you did good. But try that over the next 7 years and see how it ends up. All right? It's borrowed money. If you continue to try these strategies in the long term, you're going to give up a lot of those gains. There's old traders and there's bold traders, but there are no old and bold traders. And so, you know, that's my theory. My philosophy was, as a trader in your psychology, it was better to watch and learn from this, but not to have participated. I think any money that you made gives you an incorrect overconfidence. And any money that you lost, you now look back and say, damn it, why did I follow these people into it? I lost my money following other people's idea. I think that's the damage. Whether you won or lost, I think GameStop is causing a lot of damage. And I hate to see it, because it's causing damage to people, Marky, who mean well, young investors who are working from home, you know, who finished school. Now their career prospects aren't as good because the whole economy is freaking shut down. And it sucks. But you know what? We all pay for education. So whatever you're down, that's the price of education. You could make the market a cheap lesson or an expensive lesson. You get to choose how much you make it be. But, you know, choose to make it cheap. You don't have to pay a lot to learn a lesson. So anyways, I went off course to your question.
No, that was perfect. And so, you know, at the time of this recording, can you see that the hedge funds were squeezed out? You know, the short interest says yes, right? Short interest says that it's pretty much at 20% at this point. And another interesting thing to note is that despite the high being $483 on the 28th of January, we're in the first week of February, all right? And the price GME is currently trading at right now is right around $65. All right. So from, you know, $483 a week or two ago to $65 today, it is
actually at $55.20 now, Marky.
Oh, wow. There you go.
It's down a lot. Yeah.
So I added in the price levels this morning. All right. Yeah. And so there you go. So down more than 80% now from the January 28th highs. All right. And what I think is interesting to note here is I went again on Twitter. I went on Reddit to see what people are saying about this. All right. And I've pulled up a couple of interesting little mentions here from Wall Street Bets, which is that forum where this was posted, and also from Twitter, just searching the GME hashtag. All right. So listen to what some people are saying. And these were taken recently. All right. These are not statements from a couple days ago. This was, you know, within the last 24 hours. All right. So one of them reads this: 3 days. Are you for real? I'm not going to use the explicit words. All right. But here comes the first one. Okay. First off, it's been 3 whole bleep days. You bleep bleep. Secondly, it hasn't even been 3 whole days. You bleep. Basically, what this guy is trying to say is 3 days, and that's all it took for the hedge funds to beat you into submission. You weak bleep bleep paper-handed bleeps. All right. And they knew it too. They're laughing all the way down to $5. Everyone's going to lose interest. I'm sure they were expecting more than 3 days, but this is where it's at. So basically, be quiet and hold your shares. It's that easy. Turn off your phone, block access to your brokerage. Whatever the bleep, just hold. All right. And so that's one example of what you're seeing. All right. And the other examples kind of continue on. There's another one here, reads down 90% this past week. All right. These are the kinds of stories that, you know, you're probably not going to see this on the financial media. All right. And this is the reality of seeing this euphoria and jumping into the euphoria, you know, people down 90% this past week. This is a long one, so I'm not going to read it all the way through. Another one, you know, if you lost a ton of money playing the meme stocks, consider it as tuition. All right, the stories of here, people losing $150,000 and over the course of a couple of weeks, losing their life savings because they jumped into it. All right. A story I have for people here is a friend of mine bought into GME, AMC, NOK, BB, all because of the hype. First 2 days, he was up a nice chunk of money. But as brokerages began setting limits, buying pressure began fading. His positions quickly turned to red. All right. I asked him about a stop loss. He said he doesn't have one or doesn't even know what that is. Currently, he's down 50K. Roughly 70% of his account is gone. In the end, he gambled, didn't see himself losing, and now he lost almost everything.
Ouch. That hurts hearing about that stuff, man.
Yeah, and, you know, the reason we're kind of reading this to you guys is not to be like, you know, these people shouldn't have done this. This is the unfortunate reality of the industry, right? And this is the unfortunate reality of, you know, listening to other people's ideas and ultimately buying into it, right? Because at the end of the day, it's great that everybody wants, you know, this was the movement for the people. But like all things, right? The bubble's got to pop at some point. And, you know, you can kind of argue from 483 a week ago to down to, what was it, 55? This, you know, a couple of minutes ago, a quote from a couple of minutes ago, you know, you can kind of argue that bubble has popped. And so the real goal of this episode here is to kind of go through some of the key lessons here that you can learn, right? Because we hope, you know, we hope that you guys aren't part of this group that you might have invested, you might have got, you know, got into the euphoria, you might have invested, you might have lost some money. Hopefully you're not in there, but if you are, all right, it's not a time to be down on yourself. This is, like Georgie said, it's market tuition, right? And if anything, if this was your first experience with the markets, you know, it's tuition in the sense that it's the cheapest you're ever going to pay for a lesson, right? If you learn from this and you determine, you know, I got to actually learn what I'm doing. I can't just listen to other people and, you know, throw my money at whatever their opinions are. There's got to be more of a process to it. And so here are the top five lessons that, you know, we've kind of penned together as far as it relates to kind of this whole saga of, you know, the euphoria, what was going on, and how you guys can learn from this and learn to apply it in the future so that, you know, if you were caught holding the bag, that's not you the next time around, all right? And if anything, we hope that this can kind of save any investors in the future from, you know, if you did take a loss on it, we hope that this episode can help you guys stay out of that group next time around. So let's jump into the first lesson here. And the first one is someone always ends up holding the bag. Mm-hmm. All right. These posts from Discord and from Twitter and from Reddit are an example of that. All right. Not everybody can win. When you buy shares in a company, the only way to get paid is to sell them at a higher price. All right. And, you know, further to that point, somebody's got to buy it back from you. There's always somebody on the other side of the trade and somebody always loses. All right. And off. Yeah, go ahead.
Just finish that thought.
Oh, that was basically it. Somebody always loses. And, you know, you can't let, like Georgie said, you can't let the emotions come in because the emotions serve no role in trading. What you have to do is disassociate from those emotions. You can't completely shut them off, but, you know, as professionals, we have process, we have plans, and, you know, this is one of the things that's super important because you don't want to be caught holding the bag. And how do you avoid getting caught holding the bag? It's by taking good advice and, you know, putting it into practice, right? Before Georgie, you go in, I can kind of explain how I got into trading. You know, if you guys have been following us for some time, in the first episode, we kind of discussed how, you know, our individual journeys brought us into this industry. But for me, it was 2013, I think, or 2014. It was the marijuana boom. All right. The MJ boom. It was when the US, it was the first state that legalized recreational marijuana. And I remember it being almost exactly like what I've seen here with GameStop. It was on Twitter. That was the only thing you could see. People posting pictures of their gains, people posting pictures of life-changing money they made, people posting pictures of houses they bought, cars they bought off of the back of, you know, investing a couple grand into these marijuana names that were just suddenly exploding. You know, I saw that stuff too. Guess where I bought? Right at the top of the bubble. And that was my first blown account. And, you know, that was really the first way that I learned that, you know, it's great that times are good, but as you guys will see with another important lesson here, it doesn't always last. And, you know, by the time it's garnered mainstream attention, it's, you know, it's probably too late. And so I learned that lesson the hard way the first time around. And, you know, following up, you know, since that MJ boom, what we've seen a number of them, right? We saw the Tesla one recently in, I think, end of 2019 or early 2020. We saw Bitcoin, you know, the first time it hit 20K, and now Bitcoin's making a similar run. This is nothing new, all right? You look back in history, the first bubble that ever happened, Tulip Mania, all right? If you look at what that chart looks like, you can almost put that chart and plot it on to GameStop's chart, plot it on to Tesla's chart back in before it went to $1,000. You know, these things happen. And as long as there's humans in the market and there's emotions, you know, running the markets, these things are going to continue to happen. And so, like I said, it doesn't really surprise me that GameStop is where it is today. And, you know, our ultimate goal here is to help you guys identify with the fact that this is, you know, these are panics and busts, right? And it happened and it's going to happen in the future, right? So the best thing you can do is be prepared for the next time that it does happen.
Yeah, I love that, Marky. Like, that's really good. It's good stuff. You know, good explanation, good example. And I was there for those times too. But I want to mention something, because you can listen to this podcast and, you know, if you're somebody who has GameStop, you're not going to like anything we're saying so far, because it's not soon enough after the lesson for you to view it as a lesson. You still view it as, hey, this is like, I'm still in this trade, hold the line. But I want to tell you this. This isn't a message on a podcast that we're sharing after, you know, 2 weeks of saying, yeah, GME, I'm all in too. And then suddenly like, oh, we learned a lesson with the market. Every single day of this rally on GME, on our YouTube updates, we've been preaching the message that this is a temporary opportunity. If you got gains, you better sell some. You know, it's like, people are like, you're nuts. You don't know what you're talking about. You know, trade pro what? Like, I'm the one up $1 million. And we've always said, you're not up until you sell it. When everyone says, I'm up this much money, or I made $1 million, are you in the position? Yes, you haven't made shit. And like, pardon the language, it's a PG-13. Bleep that out, I guess. But you haven't made anything until you get out of the position. Here's why somebody always gets left holding the bag. Because people fall in love with these positions. They make $1 million on it. Never, you know, being surprised, okay, I didn't expect to make this much. Because of surprise, now they're going for $2 million. There was never any strategy involved. And now that you're up, it becomes a surprise. And you're like, I'm going to keep holding. It's going to keep going up. I got this, which means that they haven't put a stop loss on, right? It means they have no plan to exit at less than their current profit. And that's the dangerous part. It's like, once you're up money, you got to have a plan to exit if it starts dropping or going against you, and have a plan where you're going to make more money. You should always have a plan to make more money, but have a risk management component that tells you, now that I'm up 100% on this position, the most I could lose is 50. Set a level where you're going to get out. Here's why people end up holding the bag. And you look at GameStop now and you're like, it could come back. Here's why it won't come back. Because everyone's long at 400 and hasn't sold it. So when everyone spends all the money that they have, the buying power is exhausted. All right. Even if they want to buy it at 54, they can't, because they've spent their money and they're long at 400. They've lost all the future capital they had. Whereas if you flip that, you say, we're trading at 400, I'm long off the 100. If it drops below 300 again, I'm out. Now you're crystallizing gains and you have more money for the dip. You can't buy this dip because you have unrealized losses. So in terms of holding the bag, one lesson that we could learn is that you got to sell to get out of your position. And one thing I always asked was, on Twitter, like, even, you know, before this whole fiasco, when I was trading at like $250, it was like everyone's piling in on this long side. But when it comes time to selling, who will they sell it to? And you know who? It's funny, because these Wall Street traders, Wall Street bets, are saying, screw the hedge funds. You know, they're trying to like screw us over. We're going to win against them. At the end of the day, that community screwed each other, because as the stock pumped up, who do you think on the way down they were selling it to? The person that bought it first is selling it to the person that bought it last. So before this dump, smart enough people to actually sell and take some profit offloaded their position on the new people jumping in at the tops. And that's something important to notice. The person who had a plan, who was part of this, is already out of the position, and they dumped it on the head of the last buyer without a stop. That's who ends up holding the bag. And the difference between somebody who holds the bag or takes the bag home and makes some money is just risk management. You know, you didn't have to let it get this way. It's great that you want to hold something forever, but this investing isn't a forever business. You got to have a plan of where you're going to get out at a loss and at a profit. And we got so consumed with thinking about how much money we're going to make, we forgot about the fact that we have to have a downside plan too. And that's why at Trade Pro, we always say, pros manage risk, professionals chase returns. And this is no better demonstration than that. I wanted to throw that in.
Yeah, that's perfect. And you know, that kind of reminded me of a similar situation. I remember one of my friends being in, and it was with Beyond Meats. when they originally IPO'd around like the $50 region. I remember he got it early in the IPO around like $55. And I remember I think it was just before my wife's birthday. So that would have been mid-June. It was trading around like $160 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he was asking me, you know, I got in on this trade. What do you think I should do with it? And I was like, honestly, dude, it's up here. Lock some profits in. Like, lock some profits in. You don't have to take the full position off, but at least whatever you invested into it, if you put in 20K and you're sitting up like 60 grand, 70 grand right now, take out the money that you originally invested and play with house money. All right. Gave him that advice. Probably another month or two, a couple months later, you know, I see him at another party. I'm like, hey man, do you lock in those positions? Nah. In fact, what I started doing was I started day trading it. All right. So basically started day trading it and gave up majority, if not more than what he had as unrealized profits. And I think that's, you know, the point that you mentioned there, George, is important, because if you don't have a plan, you know, of where you want to get in, where you want to get out, it becomes completely emotional, right? So like you said, you know, if I bought it at 55 and it's up at 160, great, I made, and again, I use the quotes, I made quotation marks, I made X amount of dollars. It's up at 160. Why wouldn't it just go up to 300 now? You know, I'll just hold it till it goes to 300. Well, you know, I'll retire off of this. But the most important thing is you haven't made a dollar until you sell, right? It's all unrealized profits. And just as quickly as it went up, you know, as a lot of people that are holding GameStop right now can attest to, it can come down just as quickly. Right.
Yeah, so, because every dollar it goes up, it takes more than a dollar to go up another dollar. You know, you need cumulatively more buying power to get smaller wins. You start to lose that effect. And, you know, Mark, I've had, being in this industry for a long time, I had people text me with like 2001, what the hell's going on? 2009, what's going on? What should I do with my position? I stopped answering those texts. Like, if people that aren't in our community are asking me these questions, I don't respond to them at all. And they're like, hello, blah, blah. Because you know why? I'll tell them what they need to hear and they won't listen. What the hell is the point of texting me then? You know, it's like if you're looking for an opinion of somebody who agrees with you all the time, first of all, you shouldn't be texting me because I give you the raw truth. Second of all, you know, like it doesn't help them. You'll say, no, I think you should take some profit. That's not what they want to hear. They want you to tell them, Mark, wow, you're so smart, buy some more. And so when you tell them, you know, take some profit, tell them the reasonable professional trader thing to do, which is why you've been in the industry for so long, they ignore that because it doesn't confirm with their already preconceived notion of I want to buy more. Like, yeah, whatever, Mark doesn't know, I'm going to ask somebody else. And they ask everyone until they find somebody who says, yeah, you should buy more. That person is already long, so you shouldn't listen to him. You know, the first thing somebody should ask you before asking for advice is, hey, man, I'm long GameStop. Do you own any? And if they say yes, forget what they have to say. It doesn't matter. They're already long. They need buyers just like you do. Find somebody who says no. No, I'm not long. All right, interesting. Would you buy more if you were already long? Because those people don't care. They're not emotionally invested. So I think that's an important aspect is like, you know, number one, if you guys are listening to this, you're my friends, don't text me about that crap. Join the community. I'm not answering any of those stupid texts. I don't.
There you go. So that's lesson number one. Moving on to lesson number two here. All right. The second big lesson that new traders can learn from this GameStop saga is that holding a stock, irregardless of developments in the market, is ultimately a losing strategy overall.
Every time.
And so if you really think about it, every stock symbol you can pull up, you know, at some point, it probably would have paid off. Now, if I can get you to think about the companies that don't exist anymore, for example, you know, your Enrons, your Nortels, you know, my dad had, that's the one that my dad is first company he invested in, last company he invested in was Nortel. All right. That was the whole, you know, I want to try it in the stock market. The stock market's going to, you know, this company's supposed to go up, threw a good chunk of money in it, lost it all. All right. I think it was around 10,000 at the time. And so that one experience for my dad was all it took to stay away from the stock market. You know what I mean? And so if you really think about the companies that don't exist anymore, the ones that have gone defunct, There is more the companies that have gone bankrupt that are no longer trading than there are total number of stocks available to trade today. All right. So think about that. Think about that for a second. So just buying something and holding it forever without any real rational analysis on a continuous basis, not a good idea. All right. Because like we said, in the long period here, more companies are going to go bankrupt than they're going to stay afloat. And if you're just looking at the stocks that are trading in today's date, you're missing the entire universe of stocks, right? You're seeing the stocks that have made it, you know, that are afloat today. But if you take a look at the overall universe, you're just going to see that the ones that survived are around. And the funny thing is that it only takes one stock, all right, one bankrupt company to wipe out an entire portfolio when you start to get greedy, all right? And so I think that's a real big lesson to take, is that regardless of what people are posting on social media, you know, I got some good examples from Twitter. All right, let me read some of these out. This one posted January 27th, all right? Cancel your sell orders under 5,000. This is for GameStop, all right? Cancel your sell orders under 5,000. Delete your stop losses. Do not listen to the manipulation attempt. Today we will fly, followed by probably 25 rocket emojis. They will attack us. Stand firm. All right. That's one of them. We got another one posted 14 hours ago. Hashtag GME. Diamond hands. Let's say I'm in way too deep to back out now. To the moon. All right. Another one. I'm not selling blood, sweat, and tears. Hedge funds can't break me. I don't care what happens. I'm glad I was part of this. And it's a screenshot with the account value showing he's down 50% since putting on the positions in GameStop. All right. And this is a perfect example of, you know, wanting to be part of a general movement, which is kind of like sticking it to hedge funds, sticking it to Wall Street. But at the same time, like, there's no logic in here.
None at all. And that tells a story too, right? To the moon, to the moon. And then the next one is, oh man, I'm in too deep. I'm going to hold this forever. Is it going to come back to, oh, now I'm down. And now everyone's in the community saying, I'm down too. Don't worry. You should worry. That's two people that's down. How does that make me feel better? And, you know, Marky, this is interesting because it became a movement. Right. But here's the thing I'm here to share with you. You want to make a difference in this world. You're not going to make a difference squeezing $1 billion, $2 billion out of a $50 billion net worth individual. You know, great. You know, the Melvin Capital's founder's got enough money to survive for his whole life. You screwed him out of $3 billion. He's got another 50. His life, hashtag not changed. You want to make money out of this movement? You should have sold that 450, took that 13 mil, giving back to some charities and foundations, start an educational program to help people learn finances. You know, that's how you make a change. Sticking it to somebody who's already a billionaire is your excuse for why you're holding. It's not your purpose. And, you know, I don't want to be that blunt about it, but it's a good learning lesson. It's because everyone needs, what is it called in a story? The opposing person.
Like you have antagonist? The
main, antagonist.
Protagonist and antagonist. I don't remember which one's which, but it's one of the two, 50% chance.
Look, I don't have a degree and like a PhD in anything. My IQ level is probably average. So let me say it in more plain terms. Everyone needs an enemy. And it started out as I'm doing this because of PS5 sales. You know, I'm doing this to stick it to the hedge fund. So I'm doing this because it's now a movement. You know, the reality is that looks like you're creating an enemy to justify the ego that's keeping you in the trade. And, you know, that's super dangerous. That's very, very dangerous because even if you're up 10 million, willing to bet 2 years time from now with that same attitude and no adjustment, you're down. You ended up with the same place you started, no matter how much capital you have. So this is the thing about making this a movement, you know. Everyone wants a cause and a purpose to fight for. I don't see this as an authentic movement. It's really changing stuff. Guess what? Newsflash. Melvin Capital might go out of business. Another hedge fund might go out of business. There's hundreds of them that are going to continue to do business the exact same way. And that's the reality of it. So I don't know. That's a good lesson to learn is that, what was that, number two?
Yep.
Holding irregardless of developments in the market is a losing strategy overall. When the market changes, your opinion has to change. And when information comes up that's new, you have to reevaluate the opportunity. You're not buying and holding forever. You're buying and reassessing that trade. Is it a good one? Should I still hold it? Mark says it the best. He told me the other day, he's not trying to qualify good trades. He's trying to disqualify bad trades. And if he can't disqualify a bad trade, he takes it. I love that approach. It's the same idea. When you get long something, you're actively looking for things that go against your opinion. And if you can't find them, it justifies why you're long. Every day with a position is like you're trying to get in again for the first time. You always got to research, stay on top of this thing, and change your viewpoint with the market development. This isn't about living out a bias. This is about reflecting and following the market. You're not trying to be a leader and to prove a point. And that's how you be in this for long term.
Exactly. And that's a perfect segue into the third lesson here. Georgie kind of briefly skimmed on this earlier in the episode, but the third lesson that really anybody can take from this GameStop saga is amateurs, traders chase gains, professional traders focus on risk management. All right. And so, you know, this one is, you know, it's almost as time tested as the market in and of itself, right? I can definitely speak on my own experience with this. You know, the reason, the allure to trading was to make money. All right. And so when I started, that's all I wanted to do. I mean, I still want to make money, but that's not my primary focus these days. The making money is more a result of the process more so than it is the focus of the process. All right. And so amateur traders, they chase gains. I can almost imagine a lot of the people that were buying GameStop, you know, around those highs, you know, $300+. I can almost put myself in their shoes because I remember what it was like when I was, you know, when I was buying those marijuana tickers near the height of it. I wasn't thinking about what the risks were. Are you kidding me? I was thinking about the house that I could buy with the, you know, the gains I was going to make from taking this position. And you never, as an amateur, you never really think about, you know, what can go wrong. You're not focused on the risk side of it. You're anchored to, what am I going to spend this money that I'm going to make on? All right. And if you reframe it to the mindset of a professional trader, as Georgie mentioned, it's always risk first. You know, risk, if you're like professional traders, they know where they're getting out before they get in. All right. What does that do? That reduces the potential for emotions to creep in into your trading, right? Because if you know where you're getting out before you get in, that's objective. That's something that you've already determined before you actually put on that position. So if the market, if you get into that position and the market, you know, goes the way that it should go, you're getting paid where you should be, all right? You're not seeing your position in profit and saying, you know what? I've made this much. Let me see how much further it can go. And then guess what it does? Bloop. Rolls over and takes you out for a loss. And now you're anchored to what money I should have made, but I lost. But guess what? You didn't actually make that money because you didn't sell it when you had it. And so this is a really big one. And like I said, I can definitely see the perspective of chasing the gains, because when you're new, that's all you're focused on. But you know, as you spend a little bit more time in this industry, you start to rack up your licks in this industry. You take enough losses, you mature at the end of the day, right? And so for the people that might have been the buyers at the top, hopefully they covered it for small losses. You know, this is one of those things that builds your maturity as a trader, all right? And so I don't know if you got anything to add to that, George.
If you bought the top, hopefully you bought it small. But sadly, I think people that bought the top bought the biggest, because they're like, I missed out on a 400-point move, so I could get another 400 because now I could see it, and seeing is believing. We trust the eyes more than the brain for whatever reason. I've seen a 400 move. I can't miss the other 400. And you probably put maximum amount of money at the top. And, you know, it hurts. I get it. But there's learning lessons. And if you're going to stick around in this industry as a career, if you started out just to do this, to mess around, and you're never planning to do it again, if you got some money, great. You know, you walked away out of the casino profitably. But if you treated this like a casino and you lost, and if you want to come back and treat it like a casino, take that money and do something good with it. You're going to get separated from it real quick. Like, it's, I don't
go
know
to
any
the casino.
Yeah, go to the casino.
Go to the casino.
You get free beer. It's more fun. You know, you get to see people. Have some fun with that money if you're planning to just blow it away. But it's kind of like when we deal with money, Marky, because this is a money business, right? It's like the job is the money. When you deal with that kind of business, for some reason, we lose our rationality. You know, if like you're going to Goldman Sachs to apply for a customer service role on the phone in their trading department, you're not going to say, how much does Dave Solomon make? 20 million? I'd like to make 26 for customer service, because they're going to laugh at you. You're not going to get the job. But you come in the market, you're playing against people who do this as a career professionally, and you want to out-earn them as your first goal. That's absolutely nuts. You know, you could do it for the short term in these small opportunities, but in the long term, every single time. You know, I've had a lot of ex-girlfriends when I was younger, and I can tell you, I haven't met anyone that could separate money from a person as quickly as the market. Not even any of them could do it. You know, like, sure, they wiggled loose a couple fun coupons, but this thing will shake the tree until every leaf is off the branch. You know, this market is a very efficient mechanism to separate you from your money. So look, if you're in this position, there's two ways to go forward. One is take these learning lessons, adapt, understand, look, you've seen that there's a lot of opportunity. Now try to figure out how to do this professionally. You've seen the gains. Now start to look at the risk of what you're doing. Look for risk-adjusted returns. Stop looking for just returns, and the picture changes. You can do this. Don't let this be something that discourages you. Take this as a learning lesson. Some of the biggest negatives in my life, I could look back at now and say those are the best things that happened to me. But in the moment of it, it doesn't feel that way. It hurts. It sucks. You know, it's emotional ruin. You can't sleep. Sometimes you get physically sick out of it. It's disgusting, but in retrospect, it'll be beautiful. It'll be what made you who you are if you decide to pursue this. You know, and I know this journey. I could talk to you about this because I've been there. This was for me in gold. When I was trading back in the day, Marky, this is 2009. You know, things were cratering. I was buying gold from $550 an ounce all the way up to $1,030 on the top end. This is XAU USD. And I kept adding. I kept adding. And it was to the point that I was like, you know, I was young at the time, looking at BMWs, looking at cottages like you know, like wow, this is so easy. You know, this is great. And it's so easy to buy on the way up to accumulate a big position. And I did. What I discovered was when it turned, it was extremely hard to get out because number one, I had emotion. Number two, wherever I was putting my orders to get out, it just kept dropping till I lost it all. And I only know this journey because I've been through it. And so, you know, this is a message of hope at the end of the day. We're not trying to beat up this Wall Street Bets crowd. They meant well. You know, they knew what they were doing. It's just the problem is they turned it into a movement and you introduce emotion into investing. And those two don't mix. And that, I don't care how much you lost, that in itself is a very expensive lesson or a cheap one. But if you've learned it, it's worth every penny. And it's hard to see that now, but you will in the future.
Exactly. And so let's move on to lesson number four here. And lesson number four is that huge opportunities do not last a long time.
Nope.
All right. They do not last a long time. Like you've seen with this. All right. You know, what was it was basically from, let's even say the beginning of January till pretty much the end of January. So about a month. All right. So about a month, you know, and you guys have to understand that the markets are, it's a global thing. It's a global dynamic infrastructure. All right. And there's trillions and trillions of dollars at play in the capital markets. So whenever you get a huge deviation of a move that happens and it kind of exceeds the level of what people think is reasonable or logical, then it's a temporary opportunity because, like we said, there's trillions of dollars at play and you've got big firms, you know, your Citadels that are able to throw money into arbitrage, all right? And simply what arbitrage means is closing the gap between, you know, the deviation that occurred and the mean value of where the asset should be at, all right? And so one thing interesting to note here is the emotional cycle of investors, all right? And there's a reference here to episode number 20 of this podcast, which was breaking down the emotional cycle of traders. But This is something that is, you know, it's one of the staples as it relates to psychology. All right. And if you were to take the chart from that episode, from the show notes of that episode and look at the chart of GameStop, all right, you would see something very, very similar. You know, they're almost identical. And why is that? All right. Because of psychology, right? Because of investor psychology. It's really as simple as that, right? So near the top where people start getting attention, the media gets the attention, the public starts to jump into it, all right? We're basically now at that level of despair. This is kind of that blow-off phase of the market, right? So we've gone through, I believe, the emotional cycles around 12 or 14 emotions, with the first one kind of being like enthusiasm, with the final one being despair, all right? And that's what we're starting to see, all right? If you look across social media, Twitter, stock twits, anything where there's traders, you can see like the despair in the language that they're posting on. So yeah, I think that's a great lesson to learn, is that opportunities aren't going to be around forever. And like the advice I was giving to my wife's colleagues was that, you know, if you're not in on it already and this thing's gaining the attention of mainstream media, it is too late, because you're going to be the ones that are holding the bag.
Yeah, I had a friend that I would trade with in Scotia. Like, we actually sat side by side. Marky, you would know him. I'm not going to mention your last names, but from compliance, Jeff. Yeah. So we were trading together, just like ideas, not for clients, for ourselves. And then another one of my buddies, Martin, you probably know him too. Anyways, I'm not going to mention last names for their protection. And we had this thing where we chatted about, oh, hey, I'm up on, you know, this position. And like, we tell each other this thing, we'd share with one another. It's important to share and be a part of a community. I'm not saying community is a bad idea. And we'd always have this word, did you crystallize? And then we use colorful language, but it'd be to the tune of, did you crystallize and stop flossing? Like, shut up kind of thing, you know, like, come back at me when you're out of the position. So it'd be like, yeah, I'm up on like Apple. Whoa, I got the call option. Did you crystallize? I'm like, nah. And then just be like, go somewhere else until you do, right? Like, don't tell me about it till it's over. And I think like that kind of solidified the lesson in my mind. I always think about, did you crystallize? What they're saying is, you crystallize the gain. It's unrealized until you make it one of the two, until you get out. And these opportunities are very short term. In today's markets, there's a lot of capital. Valuations are stretched. And if you see a short term opportunity and you're up, you're always better to get paid than trying to get greedy and wait for more. Take some off. There's nothing wrong with, if you put $5,000 in and you made $100,000 on GameStop, there's no reason you shouldn't sell 50 of it, crystallize a 10x return, and let that run. If the company goes bankrupt, you're still up 10x. If it goes up to $1 million, great. You made less money, but you really, you don't know that until the end of the cycle, until now. And you could have made more, but you could have lost it. You don't sell because you think you're going to make more. You sell because you think it might turn on you. And this is why we get out. I don't get out as a trader because I want to make money. You know, I know if I want to make money, stay in it, keep going big and hope for the best. I get out because I don't want to lose any of it. It's as simple as that. I want to keep it. I want to use it to buy my Givenchy hoodies and my Louis V shoes, my Rolexes, all the stupid stuff that, you know, I'm a sucker to. I like materialistic stuff for retail therapy. That's why I need the money to pay the credit card. So you can't pay your expenses till you crystallize. So these short-term opportunities is a learning lesson. Next time, if you're part of it, great. You got a good trade. Get out, get paid, lock some in, leave a runner, and you're good to go.
God bless you there.
Achoo. Achoo. Givenchy.
Yeah. Hey, he got it.
Yeah, took me a second. I was like,
what is this guy getting at? Yeah. No, that was a perfect wrap up to that one. And we've got the final one here, the fifth lesson. All right. So hope you guys are enjoying this. And it's really not our intention. You know, if you are in the camp where you have held and you have taken a loss, you know, our real intention is to come across as teaching you guys learnable lessons that you can move on with. All right. So I hope that's coming across. We're coming across genuinely here because we care at the end of the day. That's, you know, this podcast wouldn't be hearing this podcast if we didn't care. Right. So let's wrap this guy up here. We're nearing the hour mark. Actually, we're over the hour mark. So fifth lesson to learn is, I think, probably one of the most important ones. All right. And we have a individual episode on this. It's called the importance of thinking for yourself as a trader. And the lesson here is that following other people's trades is a horrible idea. All right.
And amen.
Amen. Right. I think for most people, I'd probably argue for all people, you know, you care the most about your money because it's your money, right? You're the one that's working for it. And so why invest your money in somebody else's opinion, right? You can look at this now and say, you know, people have lost a lot of money. I was just looking at another little post here that somebody invested, I think it was 80 grand and they're down 80%. All right. And so, you know, those are funds that somebody worked hard for, I imagine, to build up and to have just followed somebody's idea, you know, the Wall Street idea, Wall Street Bets idea. It's unfortunate to see. It's really unfortunate to see. And so if you want to do something like that, if you want to put your money on other people's ideas, there's a role for that. It's called a financial advisor. All right. And so that's what I used to do at the branch. And I left it because, I don't know if this is the right place to say this, but for a majority of positions in big banks as a financial advisor, the interest isn't so much in that of the client. It's more so for the bank. So I'll throw that where it is. But the worst thing you can do is lose money on somebody else's idea. And, you know, you don't have to join our room to see this, but our main focus at TPA is to teach you how to fish, right? And there's a reason for that, because giving somebody a trade, yeah, that could pay them, that, you know, that can make you some money today. But what happens if that source of ideas is, you know, what if we just disappear? You know, what if the person giving you signals just disappears? Are you going to still have a source of income then? No, probably not. And from my own perspective, I find it, this might just be me, but I find it extremely difficult to rely on somebody else. And I don't know if that's my own personality trait, but there's something really good. It's like a good internal feeling about knowing that you have what it takes in yourself to make money, right? And I think that's a super important thing here, because if you're following somebody else's advice, there's always going to be doubts, all right? There's always going to be, if I get in and the market goes against me, what do I do? You ask this person what you should do. They say, I already sold. What do you think is happening right now with all these games, like with a lot of the GameStop people? Another thing that I saw in here was even text messages sent between, you know, family members, between friends, being like, hey, I'm still holding GME. What should I be doing? And the responses from that I'm seeing is, why are you still holding it? We all got out at this price. You know what I mean? And so you're the one that's taking all the responsibility. You're putting your money on the line and you're relying on somebody else to tell you what's going on. Who do you think, if somebody else is invested with their own money, do you think they're going to be taking, you know, priority of their money or your money? Yep. Right. Think about that. And so I think it's a super important point to bring up here, is that nobody in this world, regardless of what's posted on social media, regardless of, you know, whether they put hashtag hold the line, at the end of the day, people are only going to care about their money. Not that they're only going to care about their money, but the priority is always going to be on their own money over yours. And so you should adopt a similar mindset. Doesn't mean that you can't help people out, but you don't want to spoon feed them, because that's not giving them anything at the end of the day. The biggest value you can give somebody else is to help them do it so that they can be independent. And, you know, you'll see the value from doing that, because a win-win is always better than a zero-sum win or lose.
Love it, Marky. Like, that's such a good recap. Like, I almost don't have anything to say. I'm almost speechless, but you know me, I always got a little something to say.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's rare. All right, that's rare, you being speechless. We've got to have to check you out or something.
That's not rare. That's a raw steak. It's worse than rare. So, you know it. What, Marky? Like you mentioned, a lot of gold there. And one thing I want to touch on, because I think it's so important, is that, you know, Reddit gets a bad rap because of the way that they, you know, talk. And it's like, oh, these amateurs because they're not selling, et cetera. But here's the thing. There are 8 million people in the forum, and not all 8 million post. And the ones that are smart enough weren't posting. And those are the ones when it hit 400 that were selling and that you were buying it from. So you look at this community as, hey, this is cool. We're all diamond handsing together. Hold the line. It's a, you know, it's a movement. But in this very same movement, somebody, you know, needed a buyer. And when somebody's smart enough to sell, they're happy to buy. I'll tell you this. If you're going to run a short squeeze, like that, you don't do it publicly. You know, you get an idea, and if you're going to really move a stock, you just STFU and just do it, right? That's how you approach these things. And it's sad, but here's the thing about following other people's trade ideas. I wrote the perfect sentence to sum it up. If you're following someone else's idea, right, Marky, you're following someone else's plan. If you're following someone else's plan, you don't have a plan. If you don't have a plan, your plan is to lose. And so if you're in that situation, the plan's being executed, right? The problem with following another person's trade idea is, why do people tell each other that it's a good tip? Like, you know this, Mark. There's probably friends of yours that have, you know, have never really taken an interest in this industry, but we're texting you and saying, hey, man, look how much I'm up. You should buy GameStop. Have you ever heard that from people? You should buy this. It's not because they want you to buy it
all the time.
Yeah, it's not because they want you to buy it because they want the best for your family. They want you to buy it because they need you to buy it. Because if you don't, who will? And if who will, then suddenly the market turns to a sell market. And so following other people's plans and ideas is the worst way to lose money and not learn anything from it, right? Because I think that this industry is really dangerous for people. And, you know, this is kind of psychological. It is a trading psychology podcast. This industry is very dangerous for people who rely on others. I think you use the term rely, right, Marky? Like, there's something in this about being self-sufficient, but if you rely on other people and you need extreme validation, you know, there's more psychology work to be done before you start risking money. The good news is there's a course for that. And here's the other thing I want to leave you off with. You know, throughout this whole saga at TradePro, our biggest concern was this short squeeze blowing out hedge funds and them needing to sell the high quality stocks, like Mark said. Our biggest concern is this could cause a systemic market collapse. Protect yourselves. So while we're out there reading about these $1 million gains overnight, we were protecting ourselves as professional traders. And on net, if you look at that time period, every single day we're at 60 to 70% of our live capital traders were green. They weren't green GameStop numbers, but a year from now, they're going to be green consistently on the same level every single time. And that's what it's about, is making this a business and not swinging for home runs. Get on base. Get on the first base your first year. Get on second base. Eventually start taking home runs, but don't swing for home runs to start. And I think that's my advice. I think these are good lessons. And if you learned anything from these lessons, see your loss as a tuition. All right. And if it's too early for you to learn this lesson, you're probably never made it this far in the podcast because you're mad at us and you're busy trash talking TPA to somebody now because they're out there doing this little piece on GameStop. And, you know, if you haven't learned anything, it's just too early. Let the emotion settle down, you know, let the wounds heal. And then you're going to see this as a learning lesson of a lifetime. And if you're going to continue forward, I think we've given you 5 good ones. And we'll see you at TradePro Academy. And then their community is here for the long haul. We're here to make it a career, is my little cheesy saying. And
I like we'll that one. You. That was the first time I heard it.
I've been using it the last couple of days. So on social media and stuff, on my Trade with G account on Twitter, it's like, if you're here for a career, check us out. But here for a career. We'll see you in a room.
Exactly. So that's a perfect way to wrap this episode up. I don't really have anything too much to add there. I think Georgie covered it beautifully. And so that is how we're going to end it. So thank you guys so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode. As usual, if you guys think of one person in particular, I'm sure that you guys have somebody in mind that could find today's lesson helpful, you know, whether it's somebody that you know that might have invested in GameStop or somebody that was considering doing so, please share this episode with them. You know, you could be saving them and yourselves a lot of potential losses if this thing does happen again, right? It doesn't have to be GameStop. There's AMC now. I think that's another one they're trying to pump. Be on the right side, guys. If you guys enjoy listening to the podcast as well, please do us a big one and jump on iTunes, drop us a rating and review. And until next time, guys, good luck and good trading. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Mind Over Market podcast. You can find us at tradeproacademy.com.